Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, fair warning, you're gonna have to carry me today.
Yeah, you're struggling a little bit. We got games like that sometimes, man. I got you.
Yeah, today we just spent the last like 4 days down at the Gulf, and I drank the rough equivalent of the Gulf of Mexico of tequila. So that is where my body is currently at. We have apparently it's wild how quickly this is actually kind of where I wanted to start. It's wild how quickly the focus, the attention just immediately shifts to
too fast.
Like we're going right into next year stuff.
I've been blown away by it. We just had like one of the great seasons of all time, man. Like I want to swim in it like Scrooge McDuck, man. Like yeah. As much as we can, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the off season. Just one of the most special seasons of all time just happened. And I want to celebrate that as much as possible, but I've noticed that too, man. It just, everybody's really shifting their attention to I was cracking the other day. I'm in a group chat where, you know, we win a title and less than 48 hours later, half the team is being traded in the group chat to, which I respect the, you know, the spirit behind that. Right. And it's just, yeah, let's enjoy this team for a little bit longer if we can.
Yeah. I think it's because, like in normal off seasons, I am perfectly, especially since I've had the show and since we started covering the team, I have been very happy to move on from the last iteration of the Los Angeles Lakers. But with this one, I want to be able to, like you're saying, bask in it a little bit, just understand, you know, kind of understand. This is one of the topics on our way back. It was a 4-hour drive back, so I actually listened back to the Geeter episode that we recorded.
That was a fun one.
And one of the things that, you know, we talked about there was how the last 7-8 years made the fan base better, right? Because you go through, you live through some rain to enjoy the sunshine. And I, you know, I found myself really agreeing with that kind of sentiment more than anything. And then on top of that, you had the Dodgers, you know, punch their ticket to the World Series, coming back from a 3-1 deficit to do so. And yeah, I've just been as weird as this sounds because of the shit show that 2020 has been, I find myself, no, I want to stay in 20, sure. Just in terms of sports, I want to stay sports, in the 2020 version of the Los Angeles Lakers, the Dodgers and stuff. And so, yeah, I'm sure we're going to do a mailbag episode here today. And I'm sure people are going to be asking plenty about the Lakers options. I've seen some Derrick Rose talk. I've seen some Chris Paul talk. And at some point I might be more ready and more willing to do that kind of stuff and really actually devote some thought to it. But as of yet, I've found myself just kind of watching clips of this team and what we had. That seasons like that don't come along very often.
No, man, it was a special one. It was strange and weird and wonderful. But this team, man, especially relative to expectations, we talked about that somewhat Geeter as well, and just how far they came. It was, man, it was just a beautiful season in Lakers history. And yeah, I want to focus on that as much as possible.
Yep. With all that said, we're just going to dive on into this mailbag here. We're going to take a quick second, and then when we come back, we're going to answer as many of these questions as possible. People were stoked about the title and are now, like I said, super ready to move on into the offseason. And we have a ton of questions to get to, so I'm not even sure we're going to get to all of them. We'll see how that goes, though. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we brush it off or blame ourselves or say things like, I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and again, discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA
and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today and connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA.
All right, so the first question here is from Lake Underscores Show. I also, by the way, I have taken my body a leave of absence from booze just because given what's good, but I bit my tongue. So it's going to sound like I'm slurring, but I bit my tongue. So it's it's really because I
had nothing to do with the tequila.
I can show you the tongue.
I'm good. I'm good. I believe it.
All right. So like I said, question comes from Lake Underscores Show. Hey, Anthony and Pete, I'm reading the Mamba Mentality book right now, and something Kobe said stuck out to me. He said, in certain situations, like in the midst of a game, could coaches relay executional information? They point out what specifically is and isn't working. Based on that and your own feel for the game, you utilize some of that information immediately, and you save some of it in your back pocket for crucial moments in the game. Then, when the time is right, boom. It stuck out to me because I think it's a big descriptor of LeBron's process in the last series versus Nuggets. He was just collecting information along the way and waiting for the perfect moment to fully unleash it. Just thought that was pretty cool and thought I'd share. I love that concept.
That's great. And that's something that I really grew to appreciate about LeBron as well. I was like nodding my head as he was, as you were reading that question, because that long game, we get so caught up in play by play and possession by possession, even game by game. Mm-hmm. And that's why watching the Lakers and watching LeBron's approach to a playoff series, but the playoffs in general, of collecting information and that whole thing that we did where we'd start kind of in our vanilla look and play as long as we could, and that until we were forced to make a change. It was just all very intentional. And LeBron seeing how, you know, defenses were covering him, and not like it would be tempting to try to exploit that right away. And we can get very zoomed in as analysts and be like, oh, well, if they're in a hedge and recover with Duncan Robinson on this play, then we need to go to AD and he needs to pop behind the three-point line on this play. And seeing that we could get frustrated on whether it was the Denver series, whether it was even the Houston series, that Houston game one, I was like, what are y'all doing? This was we didn't look like we game planned for Houston at all. And seeing over the course of all of the series, how we learned what the other team was doing and then made the subtle adjustments to what we do to counter that throughout the series. And I would argue that we didn't get very deep into our bag of adjustments that we needed to make. The biggest one was Caruso starting, and then we melted their face off with our defense in that game and it was over. But that was the first and only time we really got deeper into the, oh, this is what we have up our sleeve. And both LeBron and the team in general, led by LeBron, it's difficult to separate one from the other, the team's approach from LeBron's. I think Lake Show is right on the money with that. And that makes me excited about the future, because I think we've got more to go to if we need to win a playoff series where we're pushed, because we never got to that point in this postseason.
Yeah, I also really like the idea of coaches focusing on the minutia of it, because I think, you know, if you just keep repeating, run harder, rotate faster, like nonsense. Eventually these guys are just going to say, like, I mean, come on, coach, we're doing our job. You got to do yours. You got to remind us what we actually need to do here. They're all grown ass men. So like the idea of really focusing on something to remind people about the details, the devil's in the details. And I think that's the purpose of this.
I would love to ask Vogel how much the 3-4 months that he had off between games, how much that was helpful, because think of how all the tape that you could watch, how, like you said, the devil's in the details. How many details can you find? Like Jared Dudley was on, what was it, with Simmons, talking about how there was one scouting report for, I forget which opponent, where LeBron like started clapping. Like, that's a hell of a scout because it's so detailed, you know? And can you do that without that big break? I think that break in the season really helped the more prepared coaches in the NBA. And I think that that describes Vogel. And then that ability to explain mid-game and relay that information. Like you said, it can't just be rotate harder, run faster. It has to be actual details that these guys who are basketball geniuses, especially guys like LeBron and Anthony Davis, Rondo, that they can apply that they haven't already seen in mid-game. And even if they don't apply it right then and there, just know next time they do this, that this happens, this is going to be what we counter with. And you may make that observation in the second quarter, but like Kobe said, you file it away. And then there's a key possession with 4 minutes left in the fourth, and that scenario transpires. That's when you can apply that knowledge. And I thought this team was a brilliant application of that.
Yeah. Actually, that winds up being a really good segue, since we're going to talk about Frank Vogel anyway. Kinetic Groove writes, two questions, and I'd love to get Pete's answers to this, too, if possible. One, would you consider Frank Vogel the best coach LeBron has played for? And two, also on the team, who are you most happy to see win a ring? So we'll go ahead with the coaching thing. What do you think?
I think Spoelstra is the best coach that LeBron's played for, but I think Vogel acquitted himself very, very well this season. I would love to see some improvements to the half court offense. I think that's an area where we can grow next year. Part of that is we don't have a shooter that's really a knockdown guy. So I remember, you know, talking to friends and they were like, oh, you know, why can't we run the types of things that Miami's running? And it's like, well, we don't have Duncan Robinson. We don't have Tyler Hero, somebody who you can set a screen for. And as they're coming off the screen, the defense goes, oh shit, like that guy is about to get an open shot. And then your big has to step up to take that away. Now you've got, so yeah, if we're able to get a shooter off of screens this summer, that's something that would really open up the half court offense. But Vogel's preparation, and Vogel, I really credit him with the defense and the defensive preparation that we had. I thought that was really key throughout the playoffs. But not to Spoelstra. Vogel had a great year, but I'd probably pick Spoelstra.
I think Ty Lue also needs to be mentioned here too.
Just in terms very good coach.
Yeah. Just in terms of, I mean, guys who win championships, man, like there aren't very many coaches who win championships and
they're not, but Vogel's one of them now.
He is. And he absolutely deserves it. And I think one thing that, you know, how this compares to other coaches, I wasn't paying as close attention to LeBron with those other coaches, so I can't really speak to this specifically.
For sure. But
one of the things that I really enjoyed watching was that growth and maturation process that LeBron and AD and even Rondo had alongside Pelinka. Like it was really fun to watch, you know, how, where we began the season and then where we ended on that season and the discourse, the amount of discourse that you saw. There was some concern that, is LeBron going to buy into somebody he didn't hand pick? Is he going to be, and watching Vogel, and I know this kind of flips that relationship on its head, because usually you think the player has to, you know, bend to the coach as well, and usually the labor has to go, you know, fall in line with middle management, and and yet actually it's the opposite of that. Like,
yeah, that's LeBron James, man.
LeBron deserves probably more respect than the most respect across the entire league. When he sits down and he's having a basketball conversation, he's teaching everybody around him. And then to see Pelinka Vogel really kind of come to understand that and work with it and seem to really relish that relationship, that was really fun to watch.
You needed a collaborator in this head coaching role, right? You had a lot of strong personalities, even a guy like Rondo, Jason Kidd, all of these people have throughout NBA history been considered some of the best and brightest. Think of like Jason Kidd, his basketball IQ, Rondo, LeBron James. These are some of the highest b-ball IQ guys in the history of the game. And you can't just come in and be like, oh, it's going to be my way. I'm not going to listen to you. You better listen to me.
Right.
It's a recipe for disaster. And so Vogel taking that collaborative approach was really crucial to this season. I forgot the second part of that question.
Who on the team are you most happy to see a ring, win a ring?
That doesn't have one already, I would guess. Yeah, probably. Gosh. Rob Pelinka.
That's a good one.
I think that he did a from the players. I would say Anthony Davis.
Yeah. That was my first answer too, but I've actually really enjoyed Talen Horton Tucker's like role in all of this.
Yo, the end of the bench guys have been hilarious with the like, yeah. Absolutely.
Because he reacts exactly how I would have reacted to all of this, where he's just like, I can't believe I'm here. Sure. Right now.
He was like playing high school games in Chicago 2 years ago, and now he's like stunting with the Larry O'Brien. Like, what's up? Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, he's just the perfect stand-in for where we all are as fans of this team. So him going to him. You know, joking about, I'm drinking orange juice while the other guys are drinking their wine and stuff like that. It's just amazing. So watching him do that, because there's also a level of innocence, like J.R. Smith pointed it out, right? Where he's like, you think this is what it's going to be like every year.
Right. You got no idea.
And Horton Tucker's just like, it isn't. It's been really fun. So in a year that has been so cynical in so many ways, it's just, I've really enjoyed reveling in the innocence that Talen Horton Tucker has brought to this equation.
Yeah, you got a Kostas as well. He's having fun. And that kid can play. Like, I'm very excited about what he's gonna bring to the table next season.
All right, let's take one more quick second here. When we come back, we're gonna try to get to as many of these questions as possible.
Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head on over to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off your first order, your second order, your third order, and however many orders you or your friends that you tell about this great product get to benefit from. They have great flavors, everything from caramel brownie. My personal favorite name is Cherry Barcia. The cookies and cream one is fantastic. And then they have the regular, salted caramel is my original favorite flavor. And it's great no matter what you might be looking for. Are you looking to supplement a meal while you're trying to cut weight? Are you looking to have a little bit of extra protein to add to a meal if you're trying to gain weight? Are you trying to maintain weight by, just having a nice healthy snack? It's going to be great for you. It's going to have you covered. So head on over again to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
All right, the next question here comes from It's Cedric. Hi, Anthony and Pete. Love your show. I look forward to my 50-minute morning commute to work because of you two. My question is, would you rather have Lonzo or Caruso on this team? Can't really talk too much about specific players there, or at least Pete can't. My thing is, I don't think it's a coincidence at all that Caruso is so great alongside LeBron.
No.
Yeah. I'm not even positive that Lonzo really had that kind of potential, just factoring alongside LeBron.
Lonzo has more holes in his game that would have been difficult, right? So Lonzo was LeBron's primary screen setter in that one year that they played alongside each other, and they got some chemistry off of that. Lonzo was really good on the 4-on-3s that result from teams trapping LeBron, right? Mm-hmm. He also has issues finishing around the rim that in a playoff setting, that was one great reminder of being in these playoffs this year, was like, oh yeah, the playoffs are about scheming against teams and players' weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And Caruso's weaknesses are not as glaring as Lonzo's are. And so if we're looking to win a title, now Lonzo's got a higher ceiling. He's going to be, I'm still a big believer in his game, and he's always seems to get hurt when he starts playing really, really well, or this year the season stopped right with COVID. But for this team, like you said, man, it's not a coincidence that, because not just last year, but the year before, where LeBron and Caruso played together, they had great two-man lineup data. And I just think Caruso's ability to defend, which Lonzo could do very well as well, but also set screens and cut and finish off of that, be a halfway respectable spot up guy, which Lonzo's become as well. Just all of it, there are fewer weaknesses to scheme against with Caruso than there were, than there are with Lonzo. So he'd be my choice at the time.
Yeah, the other thing too, and this is intangible, and we have to actually see Lonzo in this kind of a setting to gauge like how he's going to handle it. But the way Caruso never seemed too concerned about the moment, I think is super valuable. Mm-hmm. You know, he was willing to take big shots if it came down to, you know, the ball rotates over to him. He was driving to the basket and trying to create for himself in big moments where the Lakers really needed stuff like that. And again, Lonzo might get into a moment like that and prove that he's just as ready for that stuff too.
Sure.
But at seeing as we know it right now with Caruso, that's where I say I would prefer to have him. Plus, like contractually, I think Caruso is making about a seventh of what Lonzo is making.
Sure. And Caruso, there's always the question the first time a player, especially one who is really a G League guy up until this year for most of his career, how they will react to playoff level basketball. And Caruso answered that resoundingly with, he was the exact same dude that he was all year long. And that's some of that's bad. Like he had some turnovers where he was trying to do too much, going too fast. His spot up jumper went away for large portions of the playoffs. So I don't want to act like he had a perfect playoffs, but he was basically the same guy where, exactly to your point, a lot of times that guys can, as the pressure, builds and builds throughout the playoffs, and as the rotations get faster, as it becomes higher level basketball, their game changes and they shrink from it, and Caruso didn't.
Yep. Let's go. This next question comes from a whole bunch of letters. This host took a while to grow on me, but while that's probably because I grew up as an Olajuwon fan. Is the inference there? Am I supposed to take from that I don't like Olajuwon? I love Olajuwon.
Yeah, that's an odd.
Over time, however, I've come to see each team from its respective fan base's perspective, thoughtful experience, knowledge, blah, 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 blah. My favorite player was Olajuwon. Who was yours growing up? So, do you see a different version of this question? I think is kind of interesting. Do you see any kind of like fan favorite, like the kind of, if a Laker fan is like 10 to 15 years oldish, do you see anybody on this roster that they'll look back on and say like, oh man, I'll always love so-and-so. Cause like for me, it was Nick Van Exel or Anthony Peeler. Cause I was left-handed and his name is Anthony. Do you see any player like non-superstar, non-Anthony Davis, non-LeBron James? Do you see any kind of fan favorite there that's going to have lasting power? Is just like this super popular role player?
We were just talking about him, Caruso, man. He's the we'll be talking about Alex Caruso in 20 years, and he's always going to be a Laker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I hope that he is one of those guys, because I do think that, as we approach this offseason, there is going to be that conversation of, do we run it back? Do we make changes? I think it's important to identify guys, aside from LeBron and AD, of course, that are core to what we do. And I think AC is one of them, right? I don't think that you can replace AC in that he fits so perfectly alongside our superstars that I hope he's a lifetime Laker. There's also the challenge of, when you win titles, people get promoted, either if that's in role or in money, they get opportunities, and that's coaches, that's players, that sometimes you got to be like, we wish you the best. Thank you for mm-hmm. everything that you've done for the team to help us win this title. But yeah, we need to move on from that. And so there will be some of that attrition, but in terms of super popular role player, man, that's Alex Caruso is already a legend in that respect.
Yeah, I completely agree. The other thing too, like Alex Caruso, I believe right now is making either right at or slightly below $1 million a year. And the question is going to be, you know, how high does that contract climb at the end of next season when he's a free agent? And if he adds like a 3-point shot, we saw this with Patrick Beverley, right? Where he was, you know, a very good defensive player, added a 3-point jumper, and now is playing on a 3-year, $40 million contract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Caruso ever climbs to that kind of rate of pay, you're making some choices at that position. He's going to be your guy. And I hope that winds up being him. But if you're allocating that kind of resource to that position, he better be really, really good. And we know that Caruso is, and it's just, man, I always get kind of nervous when you start seeing point guards get paid more than some wing players. The wing to me is where the money should go.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a hard time, and I have to be delicate about mm-hmm. this. How much do we pay guys, and do we sign them? I just, that, again, those net ratings, they're not an accident.
Yeah.
Caruso does certain things at a high level that, and he really embraces the screen setting, the cutting, the defensive end of the floor, all of these parts that really make life easier on our superstars and fits in the spaces between that if he develops a reliable 3-point jumper. And I think part of that for him will be strength and conditioning, because he goes so hard on the defensive end. Sometimes you lose your legs, especially in a playoff setting, right? You're chasing Damian Lillard around all series, and all of a sudden your 3-pointer is short all the time. That happens. And so him being in the best shape of his life, I think, will directly impact that, but also working on his shot as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man, you'd have to get to a high number for me to be like, you know, don't bring him back. He's mm-hmm. he's in the conversation for the third most important player on this team, in my opinion. Even if he doesn't get the third most minutes, I think it says something that when in game six of the finals, when we said, all right, we're going to stop fucking around, we're mm-hmm. going to start Alex Caruso. And then we know what happened after that. I hope Caruso's a Laker for life. And hopefully we, you know, we'll entertain those conversations next summer of what, you know, at what point do you go with him? But yeah, man, he's a guy that I think we should be keeping around.
Yeah. I think the important point that you make there is, like, hopefully we're talking about him. It's like, all right, is he a 10 or is he a 12 or is he a 13? You know,
sure.
Because that would mean that he played really, really well. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go one or two more questions here.
Sorry.
They really want Alex Caruso around forever.
They do. They were just emphasizing the point there. Yeah.
Just to be clear, we're keeping Caruso. All right. So next question here comes from, I don't know how to pronounce the name. Thank you, gents, for all you do for the Lakers faithful. I heard the shout out to Lakers Ground on the recent pod and wanted to shout right back at you for the wonderful content you provide during the up and down years. Bravo, Locked On Lakers team. Peace, Jason LG. Oh, no question.
Jason and LG, what's up, Jason? I hope you're well, man.
Let's go. Nope, this is another not question. So, Anthony, man, this is such a great feeling. Thank you so much for the therapy through the tough times. It doesn't get much better than this. And I'm so happy for you, Harrison, Pete, and Darius, who you introduced me to. I'm so thankful for this 2020 Lakers squad and our Laker Nation family. That's something I said earlier, I was listening to the Geeter pod, and like, it's far and away my favorite aspect of not just this job, but like the relationship that we all have on Twitter, right? The Lakers mm-hmm. win the championship and Darius immediately starts shouting people out, right? Our buddy who came on the show, Philip Barnett, was doing the same thing, shouting out the people who've been, you know, tweeting about the Lakers since 2009, when we all had 140 characters and our ats counted in it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just, I want to make sure that I stress here how much I appreciate in the role that I get to play in it in regards to, you know, getting to talk to everybody and being held in the regard as everybody holds me, but also like this notion that it's something that we help build in any way, shape, or form. The you know, if we play any kind of role in making people feel comfortable and the culture that is built around this Lakers team is an immersive one, there's nothing more I can ask for doing this job.
It means the world to me to be some small part of making people's day better, right? If it's that 15 minute commute into work, like the other listener was talking about, or just something that helps you escape and where, you know, you're going to listen to a couple of Laker fans, people that care, but are going to be straightforward with you and they'll be frustrated with you. And just, yeah, to whatever degree that we have made people's lives just a little cheerier and helped get through those. I've gotten a lot of those messages too. Like, thank you for all the hard work during the bad years. I hope you're enjoying it. Well, back at the listeners for that, right? Like, thank you for helping make a life out of this for both of us, right? And I hope everybody in Lakers Twitter feels some bit of ownership of this championship, right? Because part of the reason, this is the secret sauce that I don't think, I always, you know, make fun of other fans and bloggers who get pissed off about, oh, they signed for Hollywood and the weather and all that. And it's like, have you ever gone to a game in your favorite team's arena when the Lakers are playing? Mm-hmm. You notice who's there, right? It's like, we take your shit over. Mm-hmm. And it's because we are a community. It's because we are so tight knit. We're so passionate about it. That's the secret sauce, is that Laker fans who, oh, you know, for years, oh, they're bandwagon, it's this and that. It's absolutely not. We go very hard for our team. And that's part of why, like, Phil Handy, man, we've been hoping Phil's coming back. I hope Phil's coming back. We all do.
Yeah.
But that man has been to 6 straight NBA finals with 3 different franchises, back-to-back titles. But when it comes to LA and does that, also, Phil Handy's a star, right? Like, we're like, Phil, please come back. And that shit's getting 3,000 retweets and, you know, like people going, Phil, we love you, you know? And he's one of the assistant coaches. Nowhere else. And Phil Handy absolutely deserves all of that love.
Absolutely.
He's one of basketball's wise men. He's really integral to the chemistry on the team. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, has everyone's respect. So I don't want to act like, oh, that's just because it's the Lakers, but it's because the Lakers are so passionate, where we go, that guy's amazing, you know, and we really exalt him and lift him up. That's something that you get with the Lakers to a degree that you don't really get anywhere else. And that's really the secret sauce behind our success. And so that's the fans, man. That's everybody who listens to the show, everybody who goes to the games, who couldn't go during COVID, but watched and participated on Twitter and all of that, man. We have all got a little bit of ownership in it. And I'm just so honored to be a part of the community.
Yep. I have nothing to add because you said it perfectly. QBreezy12 writes, hey, Anthony and Pete, in games 2 and 6, AD appeared to be the best player on the floor due to his defense. The last time I can recall a player dominating a game in that fashion was, coincidentally, AD in his 2012 national championship game. Could you expound on those performances for Anthony? Could you update us on what settling down in Austin is like, and if you'd recommend a young STEM grad like myself, accept an opportunity? I've loved it out here. I bought a house, man. It's a dream come true. And there's really cool portions of the city, you know, where if you're more into music, you go live in, you know, closer to Rainy Street. If you love food, well, it's one of the food capitals of the world. So Austin for the win. Other parts of Texas, we won't go there. Regarding AD's defense, I don't know if there's a better way for me to kind of sum up AD's defense than I watched the game 6. We had some friends over because the Vikings were playing at the same time, and we have a 2 TV set up in our living room. So our neighbors who live down in Minnesota or moved from Minnesota, they were here watching, and then the Vikings were doing Vikings things. So we were all focused on, and obviously I was focused on the game six. And my neighbor was saying, how did AD go from there to there to impact the play? And then also be able to get the rebound. And I'm just telling you, you know, people, it's one thing for you and me to notice his defense, right? We're watching that stuff. But for somebody who isn't a Lakers fan, for somebody, you know, I've talked about Jen noticing it, right? And she's more of a casual fan, but she's still a Lakers fan. She's ride or die about this Lakers team. This guy's from Minnesota. He hates the Lakers because they left Minnesota. And even he's like, man, this guy, this is insane what this guy is doing there. So, you know, Pete, you can get into more of the X's and O's and like why he was able to, if he was doing anything special that you noticed that maybe he wasn't in other games. But just from where I'm sitting, I think it's pretty insane that somebody would be so good on that end of the court that casual fans who never watch the team are noticing how special he is on that end of the court.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's ever been a player with more defensive talent than Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
In that, I think of the other great defenders, and a lot of them are bigs who couldn't defend on the perimeter. They were great rim protectors, but they couldn't defend out there. A lot of wings who were great defenders, but not rim protectors. Guys who were wing-sized and were great athletes. So, for example, LeBron, right? LeBron in his defensive prime was a monster, but he wasn't 6'10", 6'11", right? And he didn't have the 7'6" wingspan, you know? And so AD's combination of agility, his flexibility, this is something that I'm making this video for the Lakers right now about AD and about just his skills. And there are times where he'll grab a rebound, Anthony, and he's bent almost like the letter U on its side, where it's like his feet are on the ground, then like the middle of his body is, and then he's like thrusted outward, and then he's reaching behind his head. There's this rebound against Houston in the Houston series where he grabs this offensive rebound, and he looks like it's like ballet. Yeah. And he's so flexible, so coordinated. He's got great hands, his ball handling. So all of that's on the offensive end, right? But defensively, he's got a flexibility and bendiness to him that combines with his speed and his agility and his wingspan. And he tries really hard, right? He's got a great motor. He's got a great understanding of the defensive side of the ball. What is it that you're trying to do? If I take away this option, where's the second option? He had this play against Duncan Robinson in game six, where he stepped out to contest on the catch hedge to make sure Robinson didn't get a clean three. And then the next play is like, oh, I dump it into Bam because AD stepped up. Well, AD still gets that deflection. Like you said, with your neighbor, he's so good on defense that you don't really have to know that much about basketball to be like, oh, wow, that guy's incredible. And that's really the touched by the gods guys. That's a great kind of test of that, is does your neighbor who doesn't watch much basketball go like, wow, that guy's freaking amazing. And AD is one of those guys.
And on the side of the court that people just don't pay attention to. That is not something, you know, that you tend to I'm when I'm watching a game, you know, unless I'm making a concerted effort to focus in on somebody, you know, who I'm looking for something. Say like Danny Green's defense, for example, was something I was focusing in on a bunch, because I wanted to be able to explain why is it that Green was still so productive in terms of net rating and plus minus, but was so obviously not playing to his normal level. And I wanted, so I watched a lot of Danny Green's defense. For the most part, though, I'm watching, all right, where's the ball? Where are the Lakers in respect to the ball? Where is the opposing team really trying to attack on multiple possessions? Because that's where eventually the Lakers are going to have to figure that out. And so, you know, it was really fun to watch Anthony Davis, because you'd be watching, okay, so where on the court is Miami really trying to attack multiple possessions time after time after time? And Davis always seemed to be there. You know, if there was a point on the court that the Lakers were, you know, not as well equipped to defend, well, AD usually made up for it by being a freaking pterodactyl.
Right. Yeah. No, that's it. He had this rebound. That listener asked about the championship game and the parallels between these final run. He had a defensive rebound in that game where I remember watching it at the time being that is so you're supposed to high point rebounds, right? Grab just like a receiver, right? Grab it at its highest point. He high pointed a rebound at a higher point than I've ever seen a player high point a rebound. Yeah. And it's like how often, and it wasn't like a contested rebound. It wasn't in a big moment in the game or anything.
Yeah.
But I remember watching like Anthony Davis is the number one prospect in the draft. He was one of those sure thing number ones. And, but I don't follow college that much, but it's the championship game. Right. So I'm definitely watching this and watching this kid coast to post go number one and he gets this rebound. And I'm like, holy crap. Like just the fact that he can do that high in the air, man. And the fact that he's a Laker and winning a title with the Lakers all these years later, man, just a special guy. I hope we have him for the rest of his career.
Yeah. He was the most can't miss prospect that I had seen. Like he was up there with the Duncans and the LeBrons and sure. I just thought like whatever team had him, if they didn't completely fall on their face, which way to go, New Orleans. They were going to have a championship type contender so long as he was on that roster. And you know, now fortunately the Lakers have that for the second half of his career in his prime. Like he could theoretically get better next year.
Mm-hmm. With all that championship experience. And yeah, he's a guy who film work is. If he can master the film room, he's got everything else, man. He's absurd. And so, yeah, a lot of the stuff that he can get better at will come from age and experience and wisdom and being surrounded by the people that he's surrounded by. Yep, what a great recipe for that to happen, man.
Yep. I can't wait. I can't wait. I, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, we'll probably, you know, take a step back from this team and leave it where we leave it. But I'm just not quite ready to do that yet, man. I don't know when I will be. I, you know, maybe tomorrow. I saw that ESPN's trade machine, you can now use all of the contracts. That's usually a pretty big day in my off season. But other than that, though, I you know, I hopped on the trade machine and I was mostly basically going through the motions because I'm not quite ready to leave this team behind yet. It was just that special of a season, and I think it's going to continue to be that special of an offseason. They were just really, really cool. They were really, really good. They were unique in the way that they won, right? They were kind of this throwback team that literally beat you into submission. And then on top of that, somehow they were also likable. Usually the bully team isn't also likable.
Yeah.
Which, you know, maybe fans of other teams might have felt they weren't as likable.
Yo,
as
I if our team them to be. If our team was their team, they would have loved them.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is all I really care about, right? All I care about is did I like this team? Was it a fun team to root for? Yes, yes, and a few times over, yes.
Yes.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We have enough questions to where we might come back and answer a few more of them tomorrow.
Let's do it.
So if you guys have any more questions, send them in the forum. Yeah, we have a ton of questions. So that might be what we do tomorrow. If you guys have questions, leave them in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes. And I promise we will get to those. Skipped over a couple questions today because they were kind of game specific and situation specific as we went back into some of the questions you were asking during that Heat series. But other than that, I'm going to try to answer all of the ones that I can. And Pete and I will do so tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's.